Welcome to Torah Timecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Ruchama Welcha, and today we're going to be learning Parsha's Kisisa. The Parsha begins with the final details of the Mishkan. Firstly, there's a census, and everybody brings a half shekel as a method of counting how many people there are. And then the money that's collected is used towards the building of the Mishkan. And then we're also told about the making of the kiyar in this parak, which is the wash basin that the Kohanim used to use to wash their hands and feet. And we're also told about the Ketores, the incense. And then after that, we have one of the most significant stories probably in our entire history, which is significant because of its massive ramifications, the Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf. So in summary, Moshe goes up to Har Sinai to receive the Luchos, the tablets, and he tells the people that he's going to be gone for 40 days. And they miscalculate and then they panic because he hasn't returned on time. And they worry that he isn't going to be coming back at all. So they become desperate for a way to connect to Hashem. And for whatever reasons, which is another whole topic, they think that they need to connect via an intermediary. So they ask Aaron to help them make this intermediary, this go-between, so that they can connect to Hashem again. And that's the long and short of how the golden calf comes to be created. So Hashem tells Moshe to go down the mountain and to see how these people have strayed. And Moshe goes down and he's holding onto the luchos, he's holding onto the two tablets, and he sees them dancing around this golden calf. And in his response, he smashes the luchos, he smashes the tablets. And then the parasha continues with him going back up Har Sinai. He davens for forgiveness for Bnei Israel. Hashem forgives them, and we receive the second set of luchos. And that's the aspect of the parasha that I'd like to focus on today. And I'm going to do it based on a series of essays by Rav Gedalia Shor in his Sefer Or Gedal Yahu. Rav Gedalia Shor was an American gadol who passed away relatively recently in 1979. And he has a lot of discussion about the difference between these two sets of luchos, which have very big ramifications for understanding the way this world runs, for understanding the difference between a world that should have been and the world that is. So let's begin by looking at the way the Torah describes the first set of luchos, the luchos rishonis. So in our parasha, the pasuk describes Moshe coming down the mountain with the first set of luchos, and it says, "V'haluchos ma'aseh Elokim hema." The tablets were the handiwork of God. He made the tablets themselves. V'hamichtav michtav Elokim hu, and the writing was also the writing of Hashem. Choros al haluchos, it was engraved. So we have 3 points in this pasuk. The luchos, the tablets, were made by Hashem himself. The writing was written by Hashem, and the writing was in the form of being engraved. Now, very often in Chazal, we have luchos and writing as comparison to body and soul. Or another example, Torah and the letters of the Torah, comparison to body and soul. Quite a famous example of this is with Rabbi Chanina ben Taradin, who was one of the 10 martyrs, one of the Asara Harogei Malchus. The Romans killed him by wrapping him in a Sefer Torah and setting it alight. And his Talmidim asked him, "Rebbe, what do you see? What's happening?" And he said, "The parchment is burning, but the letters are flying to heaven." In other words, my body is burning, but my soul is flying to heaven. The parchment, the Torah, the tablet, they represent the physical body, whereas the writing represents the soul. So if we plug that into the description of the luchos in this case, what are the implications? If Hashem carved the actual tablets, Hashem made the physical tablets of stone that represents the body, that means the body component was also spiritual, was also elevated. It wasn't just the writing that was spiritual, the writing was also spiritual, but the body, the physical body itself, was also elevated to something spiritual at that time. Both tablets and writing, both body and soul, both were holy. Now another point about this description. When something's engraved, it means that the two things become one. It's not two separate entities. If I write with ink on paper, so the ink and the paper are essentially separate. But if I engrave onto a piece of wood, then my writing and the wood are each other. The writing is part of the wood. They're kind of synced. So if we say that the writing was engraved on the luchos, on the tablet, that means the writing and the stone had become one. The writing and the stone were synced. And again, if we plug that in, that means that the physical and the spiritual were totally one, were totally synced. So let's try and understand what that means, because this is analogous to the level that we were on at that time. Our bodies and our souls always want different things. They're always battling, they're always struggling with each other, they're always at war. Our body wants one thing, our soul wants another thing. But sometimes, or for some people, or for all of us in some situations, they're less at war. Some people who are on a higher spiritual level, even their body wants the spiritual thing. As a very simple example, the more spiritual a person is, the less they perhaps crave to eat something non-kosher. Wanting to eat pork is maybe a sign of a less spiritual body. Now, at the time when we accepted the Torah, our bodies and souls were completely synced. Even our physical bodies just wanted to do what was right. There was no struggle between body and soul. There was none of this battle. We just wanted to do the right thing. And this was represented by the engraved writing on the Luchos. The writing and the tablet were synced. They had become one. The body and the soul had become synced as one. This was our level at that time. And we see this expressed with the way we said, Nasa v'nishma, we will do and then we will hear, which the Gemara tells us is the trademark of the Malachim. It's the trademark of the angels. How so? Angels don't struggle. They don't wrestle with physical temptations. They want to do the right thing. They don't struggle with making difficult decisions. That was us at that time. There wasn't a struggle. Our physical, our spiritual, it was all synced. It was all spiritual. And one more thing about this first set of Luchos. The Gemara in Erevin tells us, don't read it as chorus, engraved, but read it as chairus, which means freedom. Because at that point, when there was total sync between body and soul, spiritual and physical, we became free from the Yetzirah, and we became free from the Malach HaMavis, from the angel of death. It represents a total perfect world, where there was complete sync at that time between our bodies and our souls, total spiritual perfection, and free from the angel of death. Back to the way the world was when Hashem had originally created it, a totally perfect world. This was our level at Matan Torah for the first set of Luchos. But then after we sin with a golden calf, we receive a second set of Luchos. And the first difference about this set is that Moshe carves this set himself. Hashem says to him, "P'sol lecha shnei Luchos avanim kavarishonim. You have to this time carve two tablets of stone, like the first ones, but you carve them. And I'm going to write on these tablets the writing that was there originally on the first set." So the writing is still divine. The soul is just as spiritual. However, the physical is different in this case. The content is the same, but this time the physical body of the Luchos is made by Moshe, not made by Hashem. So we have a different kind of relationship with the body this time round. A body can contain Torah, a body can contain spirituality, but it's not intrinsically spiritual as it was with the first set. And we have to work very hard to get our body to sync with our soul. It's very hard to make the right choices. It's always a battle on some level. Our body wants one thing, our soul wants a different thing. We're not angels. We have a Yetzirah. It's not as easy to make decisions in this world. And another difference between the two sets. When we received the first set, everyone was there. It was a public revelation, lightning, fire, thunder. With the second set, who was there? Just Moshe. Only Moshe was there to receive them. It was a world of Hester upon him, where we don't always understand Hashem's ways. And in this week's parasha, after the story, when Moshe asks Hashem, "Can I understand more about you? Can you show yourself to me?" Hashem says, "I can only show you my back." We don't understand the ways of Hashem in this world. So to clarify, we really needed that second set of Luchos because the first ones didn't work for us. We can see that from the sin of the golden calf. It's in the same way that there's no point in teaching kids at a level that you think they ought to be at. If they're not at that level, it won't work for them. We have to work with people where they are. And we needed the second set because that's where we needed to be. That's who we were. That's where we were. It might not be perfect, but it's what we need. So if we summarize the difference between the two sets and then try and understand what this means to us. So the first set represents a perfectly spiritual world where there are no physical desires, there's no death. But a perfect world also requires perfection of behavior. In other words, it's a world that is run with din, with judgment, with Hashem's midah of judgment. And the second set represents an imperfect world where there's a Yetzirah, there are strong physical temptations. There's Hester upon him, we don't understand Hashem's ways. There's death. But there's an upside to the second set. It's a world that's run with Hashem's midah of rachamim, with mercy. It's a world where we can make mistakes and we can survive in that world. The Rambam tells us that the second set represents teshuvah, because we did teshuva at that time, and then we received the 13 attributes of rachamim from Hashem, the 13 attributes of forgiveness. So the day also of receiving the second luchos, it becomes a day of teshuva and of forgiveness forever. It becomes Yom Kippur. So what came out of this terrible fall and this imperfection, what came out of it was a day of return and reconnection for generations. So again, it might not be a perfect world, but it's really the world that we need. So now what we need to understand is, how does Hashem relate to this new imperfect world, and how do I relate to it? And I want to develop this further based on something that I heard from Rav Yisrael Reisman, and he bases this on this framework from the Or Gadol Yahu. So there was another person many years later who was taken to the same cave where Hashem told Moshe, "You can see my back, but you can't see my face," where Hashem told Moshe about the reality of Hester Panim. So this story takes place in the days of Eliyahu HaNavi, where there's a wicked king called Ahav, married to a wicked queen called Izebel. And Avodah Zarah at that time, idol worship is absolutely rampant. Everyone's worshipping idols. So as a punishment and as a response for this terrible idol worship at that time, Eliyahu HaNavi decrees a drought. And this drought lasts for 3 years, and it's very long, and it's very terrible. There's a terrible famine. And finally, at the end of the 3 years, he brings everyone together for a massive showdown on Har HaKarmel, where he proves that the false prophets are false prophets, and he proves that there's nothing to believe in about idol worship, and he brings a fire down from heaven for his sacrifice, and everyone falls on their faces, shouting, "Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem is the true God." There's this massive display of belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it's not a happily ever after story, because Izebel, the wicked queen, her response to this is, "I'm going to kill the Eliyahu." So he has to run away, and he runs to a cave, and he says he wants to die. So let's understand a little bit more about this story. According to Rav Tzadok, according to the Malbim, according to the Alshech and others, Eliyahu lived in a world of luchos rishonis. He lived in a world of the first set of luchos. He had achieved something called zikuch haguf, total perfection. His body had become holy too. He was totally in sync, his body and his soul. He was spiritually perfect. And it's very hard to be perfect in an imperfect world. He couldn't relate to the imperfections of Klal Yisrael. He couldn't tolerate the fact that they were worshipping idols. And that's why he responds to them with the attribute of din, with judgment. "You're doing the wrong thing. You need to be punished." And that's why he decrees the famine. For whatever reasons, Hashem had decided not to decree a famine at that point. Eliyahu HaNavi decreed the famine, because he related to the world as a world of perfection. So the story continues after he runs to this cave and he says that he wants to die. So Hashem sends a malach to lead him to a different cave at Har Chorev, which is Har Sinai. And the malach tells him to walk for 40 days. He tells him to eat something so he has strength. And then he goes on a 40-day journey without any food or any drink, which exactly parallels Moshe's experience of not eating or drinking for 40 days. And at the end of the 40 days of not eating and not drinking at Har Sinai, exactly the same as Moshe, Hashem tells Eliyahu HaNavi that he's going to reveal himself to him. So, Hinei Hashem Over, Hashem's going to pass before you. So there's a Ruach Gedolah, the Navi describes, B'chosak Mefarek Harim. There is a tremendously strong wind that can smash mountains and break rocks. But Lo Baruach Hashem. Hashem is not in that very strong wind. And then the Navi tells us, V'achar HaRuach Rash. And after that very, very strong wind was a powerful, powerful noise. But Lo Barash Hashem. Hashem was not in that noise either. V'achar HaRash Eish. And after the incredible noise was a strong fire. But Lo Ba'esh Hashem, Hashem was not in the fire either. Va'achar ha'esh, and after the fire, Kol Demama Daka, there was a small, still voice. So Hashem shows Eliyahu HaNavi fire and brimstone, and he says, "But that's not me. I have lots of storms, I have lots of fires, I have lots of forces of destruction, but that's not how I choose to relate to this world. I relate to this world with a Kol Demama Daka. I don't relate to it with punishments and with din. I relate to it with a small, still, quiet voice." Hashem takes Eliyahu to the exact same cave where he showed Moshe, this is a world of imperfection. And he teaches him, it's not a perfect world. I appear in a small, still voice. And I prefer for you to also use that small, still voice. I prefer for you to daven for your people instead of criticizing them. I prefer for you to not declare droughts. Now we face the same challenge as Eliyahu HaNavi sometimes. We know we're not perfect. But sometimes we might feel that we're more perfect than other people, or we might feel we're more perfect in a certain area. So you have to fill in the blanks here, right? You have a higher standard of kashrus than someone else, or you give more tzedakah than someone else, or you do more chesed than someone else. And it's very hard to be perfect in an imperfect world. It's very hard to stay tolerant. We feel irritated, we get annoyed, we're critical. But let's remember that we ask Hashem to tolerate us with all of our imperfection. When Hashem promises to wipe out the family of Yeravam, who was another evil king in Sefer Melachim, for all of the idol worship that he and his family are responsible for, there's one child in the family that he promises will get a decent burial. And the reason for this is because Yan Asher Nimtza Boi Davar Tov, because he did one good thing, this child. He was a bad person, but he did one good thing, and Hashem acknowledged and validated and recognized that one good thing, and he rewarded him for it. We have a mandate to be like Hashem, v'halachta bedrachav, we should walk in his ways. We must also make an effort to find that one good thing in people. Eliyahu HaNavi is fired as a prophet. Hashem says that you're too critical, you've got to go and you've got to appoint Elisha to lead the Jewish people instead of you from now on. He was the only Navi to be openly fired. And this is based on the Mefarshim. I couldn't say something like this myself. Because he was too critical of the people. Hashem says, I need a leader who's less critical. When will Eliyahu HaNavi return to the world? When Mashiach comes, when it's a perfect world, when we can cope with a perfect leader. So we're waiting for the day when we return to the world of Luchos Rishonis, of the first set of Luchos. When it will be a world where our bodies and souls are more aligned, when there's no Yetzirah, no temptation, no Hester Ponim, no death. But in the meantime, until we return to that world, let's look at other people with all of their imperfections in a world of imperfection, in the same way that Hashem relates to us here. He doesn't relate to us with din, but he relates to us with racham and with mercy. He doesn't relate to us with fire or strong winds or loud noises, but with a kol demama dakah, with a small, still voice. Let's attempt to be the same. Have a great week.